TransCanada an opportunity to rebut some of the statements that have been made. Okay. Juliet. I will let you want to speak to that.
This is a rulemaking proceeding, and they're holding the hearing in accordance with the notice that was published. The question I just asked when Juliet was, you obviously you can have as much time as you need, but do you have an estimate of how long?
I'm going to be brief. Certainly no more than 10 minutes.
I should say as much time as is reasonable.
Right. Certainly no more than 10 minutes and probably less.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you, commissioners. I just want to follow up and is that too loud? On some sort of big picture issues in context of where we are. Granting the petition is not the same thing as granting approval to undertake any activity, wind power or any other activity in the petition area. It wouldn't authorize TransCanada to cut a tree, and it wouldn't authorize TransCanada to move a grain of dirt. And I think it's just important to keep that in mind, that any application would come before the commission and would be subject to a comprehensive review process. And in response, I think, to a question that you asked, Commissioner Laverty, about the significance, if it becomes expedited, what does that mean with respect to the visual assessment, is a very good question. If you're in the expedited permitting area, there is still a comprehensive visual assessment process. The most significant difference is that in the expedited area, you only look at visual impacts to scenic resources of state or national significance, which are defined under the Act. And if you were looking at an area, so for example, in the Kibbe project, Kibbe Mountain and the fire tower were not scenic resources of state or national significance. So if we were proceeding under the new law, you wouldn't look at the visual impacts on those resources. Importantly here, the visual resource that people have raised the most concerns about is Chain of Ponds. And Chain of Ponds is a scenic resource of state or national significance. So it will be fully evaluated in the context of a specific application in which you will hear from experts, in which there will be cross-examination. For example, in the Kibbe expansion project, LURC has already retained their own independent visual expert. So that in the context of a development application, you will have the benefit of a fully developed record before you, which, you know, quite frankly, you don't have before you today. And I appreciate that that may, you know, create some challenges for you. And there have been a number of misstatements that I think would be corrected in the context of a more fully developed record. For example, there was a statement about the percentage of Chain of Ponds that would have visibility of turbines, which was just flat out wrong. There was a statement about views from a particular camp owner's house of turbines in the Kibbe expansion project, which was just wrong. So again, I think the commission can take comfort that at least in this context, the visual resources that are of most concern would be fully evaluated even if this area were expedited. Then, just following up on the Bicknell's Thrush discussion, there was a statement that just to be clear, surveys were done in the petition area and there was no suitable habitat found. There was a statement that protocols require 2 years of survey as opposed to 1 year of survey. In fact, the surveys that were done are consistent with the ones that were done at the Kibbe project. The protocols were developed in consultation with U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, Inland Fisheries and Wildlife, and the Vermont Center for Ecosystem Studies, which has particular expertise in this. So we're not aware of any recommendation or protocol that calls for 2 years of studies. But again, in the context of an actual development application, and you will hear this in the context of the Kibbe expansion application because the same issues are going to be present in that application that would be present with respect to the petition area. You will hear from experts with cross-examination. You'll hear from agency representatives from IF&W with respect to subalpine habitat. You'll hear from MNAP. So I think it's important to keep that in context that you will have the benefit of a more fully developed record. Just one point, because there might have been some confusion on this also, on the subalpine habitat, there's 40,000 acres of mapped subalpine habitat in the state. And in fact, the working definition that resulted in additional mapped area in the petition area would result in even a greater total acreage in the state of Maine of habitat if you use that definition. And obviously, there's a fair amount of habitat that's not mapped. And, you know, the Sisk Kibbe expansion area is a good example. As part of the surveys that were done, there's now mapped area that didn't previously exist. I think one of the challenges you have is stepping back and trying to look at this from a landscape level. And consistency with the CLUP is really an important part of that. I wanted to just remind you of, and I know you are painfully aware of this, but the CLUP has oftentimes competing principles and goals. But one of the goals, one of the broad goals, is to support and promote the management of all resources based upon principles of sound planning and multiple use. So there's nothing that says you can't have any impact to subalpine habitat. There is constantly a balancing process that must occur and an evaluation of whether the particular impacts of a particular project are acceptable. And when you think about a landscape view of the petition area, I think it's very important that it is in close proximity to the Kibbe area, where there's been a determination that this general region is an appropriate area for wind power development. It's not in the remote core of the jurisdiction. It's close to existing infrastructure, transmission lines, roads. It's wind power there was determined to be compatible with existing recreational uses in the area. Now, that's not to say that the petition area is exactly the same. I mean, the petition area has some differences, which you've heard about today, subalpine and visual impacts on chain of ponds. But again, in the context of a development application, you would have full review over that process of evaluating any specific impacts related to those resources. I think Rufus Brown raised an issue which we totally agree with, which is if the Kibbe expansion project is denied, the petition is completely moot. The petition area wouldn't support a standalone wind power project. And we don't have any objection to the commission making a decision on the petition sort of coincident with the Kibbe expansion project. You would have the benefit, as I said, of hearing pretty specific testimony about the nature of impacts in that general area. It's not going to be specifically in the petition area, but you would have the benefit of that more developed record. And then I think in putting into context, if the commission denies the petition, they're denying TransCanada the opportunity for potential optimization of a 15-turbine layout. And if you grant the petition, you're not authorizing any specific impact. Any proposal within that area would come back to you for full review and approval. So I think that was less than 10 minutes. And let me just express again our gratitude and to the commission and staff and patience for going through what I think has been a challenging process for everybody.
Commissioner, questions?
Julia, I appreciate your comment that it might be useful to consider our action on Kibbe 2 somewhat at the same time or around the time we take action on this petition. But I wanted to ask you, because it's begun to occur to me, without the approval of Kibbe 2, it's just not economically impractical, but it doesn't meet the first criterion under the guidelines, as I read them.
Well, it's the first criteria is a natural geographic extension
right.
of the existing expedited, and the
if there's
Kibbe
no project,
2, but the Kibbe 2 is a existing expedited. I think, you know, it probably comes up more in your, potentially your second criteria, but, or I guess potentially your first criteria, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think it would be an issue, so, yeah.
Yeah, no, they're inextricably,
yeah.
You know, connected, no doubt about
and
it.
And again, it's the process we've been handed.
Yeah.
But I think
all of us, yes.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think we need to consider that it might be best to deal with the Kibbe 2 and then deal with the petition. But, I mean, I think that's something that needs to be talked about. Thank you.
Thank
you very much.
Anybody else? Questions?
I don't know if this is the appropriate time to say it, but there's been a lot of discussion about whether or not power was generated this winter or not, and we have access to one piece of information that suggests that over the course of the 11 months there has been generation. But I'm wondering if we can get, regardless of how this goes forward or when it goes forward, information on a month by month production of power and how it corresponds with the projections that we were originally given for the original projects, to see if they're just to get a better handle on how the projections match up with reality.
One thing, there is a requirement that we submit a evaluation of the energy generation for the project, annually, and it was determined to wait until the end of the first full calendar year, and so I don't think there's a problem if the commission wants to know what the production was for the first partial year of the first part of the project. But I don't know, Terry, if there's anything else to add to that.
Oh, maybe we don't have that information. I guess it's just important to know. I mean, there's always conflicting claims about how much energy these actually produce and when they produce it and whether they produce it when it's needed and the impacts of too much wind or not enough wind. And I just think it's really important for us going forward to know how closely their projections reflect reality.
Yeah, no, I think that
and
was
also,
the intent
and actually
of that
the other piece of it I think would be really helpful is I think projections are made before the towers are sited based on the Met tower information, and then actually start doing projections after you've sort of at least placed the towers on paper. And it would be important to see what those initial estimates, how well they correspond to reality as well in terms of determining viability. I don't think
it's a problem to give the total energy generation from the project for the period of time that's been operating. I think looking at turbine by turbine production and comparing it to estimates starts to run into some sort of business confidential, but I can let Terry
I don't mean turbine by turbine, I mean month by month.
Yeah.
That would be way too much information, but it sounds to me as though that there's a couple different, the projections are made at a couple different phases in the development of a project, and I don't mean the physical development, but the, you know, from when it's first conceptualized, it first becomes an idea. And I think it would be really helpful for us, I mean, I can't speak for the other commissioners, but for me to see how closely these projections, whether they're before the towers are actually put on paper, like we know we're going to put one there, one there, one there. So before that.
Sure, maybe I can respond
then
just
when
briefly. We're happy to give you whatever production numbers you want. I think you want to be very careful about taking half the project partial year and saying, okay, this is either good or bad. I mean, we've seen projects we have elsewhere that start out with gangbusters and then sort of level off. They start out under and then come back. The Kibbe project, we did have some issues with the collector system this winter that caused some outages for the turbines and took some production. So we did lose some production. Those problems have been rectified. The turbines are up and running now for the first phase. So you'll see, you know, the actual production will be less than sort of a theoretical half project output, although we never said really did production estimates for that first, just for the first phase, but we can give you the actual production if that. It'll lead to a lot more questions, but, you know, about, okay, so why was this? And, you know, was it windier than normal? Was it less windier than normal? Was it a turbine issue? Was it a wind issue? But, you know, again,
I think that's important to know as well. Is
sure.
Why? What happened with the collector systems? I mean, there have been, as I've said a couple times today, we get conflicting information.
And I appreciate that. In our view, these are short-term commissioning, issues that crop up on most projects. Again, we've REMITA, the project is now, you know, operational, and power output is going out now. I don't think there's we haven't seen anything in the performance of the system that suggests that we're off track of what our original production was. But it is very early.
No, I think that getting this information when it's available is important, and I hope that from all of the commissioned wind farms we'll be able to get this, because we go through all this stuff and we get all kinds of conflicting information because everybody is confused.
Sure.
And we're not the only ones. There's 492 towns out there that are having to deal with this alone, and it's tearing towns apart because they have these same kinds of conflicts.
Yeah.
So the sooner the state can get good information to get out, we can either accept or refute some of the information that we're getting.
No, I understand. Like I say, my only caveat there would be just first year, there's always issues, right, on every project. But, again, we're happy to share the data that's available and give you some explanation of why the outage occurs and what we've done to rectify it.
When you gave us projections in the permit application, did those projections take into account startup phase?
I think the projections that we provided were kind of first full year of the whole project going forward.
Okay, so the so 11
it would be
months.
Kind of like 2011 sort of.
Well, all
forward.
We want to know is, given what you state you're going to produce, where are you? And if you stated that you're going to produce X number of kilowatt
and
hours.
And as I say, we've seen nothing that would change our long-term projections of this project.
But in the memo, the estimated was 300, and this is in the memo, it's typed as 357 million kilowatt hours per energy year. So that's errata, I believe, right? Should be mega.
357,000 megawatt hours or 357 million kilowatt hours.
Oh, okay. 357 million. That's was estimated for the first year.
First full year of the 132 megawatt project.
That's what it says, 300 jobs. Actual and estimated benefits.
Yeah.
There's an estimated output, but no actual. So
that's a full year steady state.
Full year, full 132 megawatts,
right.
12 months. The wind isn't the same every year. Like I say, you can get good years, you can get bad years, but that's the 20-year trick. And that's why it gets tricky when you look at sort of short-term data.
But isn't part of the value of the wind when it blows and when it's needed and when it can get onto the grid? I mean, I think I'm a little – that notion of a 20-year average is –
That 20-year average, though, is made up of kind of an hourly profile. You know,
okay. Well, and I just –
built up to a monthly and then an annual and then a 20-year average.
For me to be able to have a sense or to feel comfortable assessing like the viability or the value of the energy, it's important to me to know when it's generated, whether it can be used, what it's shutting down, and where the failures in the system might exist. And that's sort of what I'm getting at, is how that actual data monthly compares to the projections, I mean, to going forward.
Yeah, so I guess the only thing I could add is we haven't been congested out. There's no issues of congestion. Like I said, the one issue we've had was with the collector, and then that's been rectified. So.
Thanks.
Thank you very much. I think we have one more discussion that we want to have as a commission return to. And
are we still within the hearing?
We're still within the hearing, I believe. Yep.
That's fine. Yeah, don't.
Did the people have an opportunity to comment?
I don't. You mean on what we're going to deliberate on?
Why don't we close the hearing and then have the discussion?
Oh, I see what you're saying. Yeah, in terms of the public comment opportunity.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes, I agree. Yes.
Okay, let's close the hearing. It actually wasn't publicized that way. All right, here we go. I wish to remind everyone that the record will remain open for written comments from the public for 10 days until Monday, March 29th, and for an additional 7 days until Monday, April 5th, for rebuttal testimony. No additional evidence or testimony will be allowed into the record after that date. After the record closes, the commission will direct staff to compile the testimony and present a recommendation. I now declare this hearing closed.